The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Here. It's Friday, and somewhere in the world it's already Saturday. So we'll assume there will be a Saturday, at least here, hopefully. Things are getting worse in Ukraine. The amount of lies coming out of the Ukrainian government, which is really NATO and the U.S., astounding. Just astounding. Virtually nothing that is being said is truth. Very little. And only portions thereof. It's just remarkable. Watch carefully about these bioweapons labs. Right now, the story is from Russia, and it's probably quite true. You wouldn't have to be very smart to figure it out. The Ukrainians are going through the labs that are still in western Ukraine and still in their hands that have not yet been captured by the Russians. And they are burning and destroying everything they possibly can. Hard drives. Can you imagine the names that might well be on some of those hard drives regarding certain viral weapons projects and so forth that are being conducted in those labs? Names that are very common to the American media. I won't say any names because I don't want to get anybody in trouble who's not there, but I think we can guess pretty well who these people are. So there's a lot going on. It ain't you. So let me welcome back from the dead, the man who actually crossed over and then was sent back because they didn't want him over there, Harry Cooper, who died and returned only to be able to do this program. Admiral, welcome back.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, but you're absolutely correct. There's so much baloney coming out of, and Schwarzenegger's on now too.
Oh yeah, I was just looking at that. Here, I got to place that. Go ahead, finish up.
I used to race on the super speedways, and I was watching the NASCAR race over the weekend. And Richard Childress, I think it was, who owns RCI Racing, he pledged some $380,000 to Ukraine, and then, not to be outdone, Roger Penske come along and said he's donating $1 million to Ukraine. Everybody's tripping on themselves. And now somebody tipped me off to Google, and there's a whole bunch of websites that say that Zelensky, or whatever his name is,
is nominated,
he's packed away $1.2 to $1.5 billion in the Dresdner Bank in Costa Rica,
right,
and that he's got a $35 million mansion in Miami Beach.
Oh, we don't know what the number is there. I've heard 12 to 21 million, 35. The point is, he's selling his mansion on the western coast of Italy. He's got the one in Miami. He will be given full protection here if it comes to that. The guy is filthy rich. I had the video of him packing his nose with that funny white powder.
Oh,
you
geez.
Saw it. I think you saw it. It was blatantly obvious. He's a fraud. And now
is
he's
he
going to be not...
Is he a friend of Hunter Biden? Wasn't it Ukraine that was giving Biden tons of money?
Yeah, well, they've figured the Bidens have gotten at least $1 billion out of Ukraine, yeah. The country's been raped.
I can't get any of this money. I've been to Ukraine. I think it's a nice place. Send
you don't
me
do,
money.
You don't do enough cocaine. I've told you this for years.
I don't do any cocaine. I've never done cocaine. I've never done drugs of any kind.
I know.
Dude, I didn't even smoke marijuana.
You didn't even inhale the marijuana. Okay.
I didn't do any marijuana.
Now listen up. Listen up. This is important. The fraud that is the Ukrainian government has by virtue of the American mainstream media and the government, conned most of America into thinking Ukraine is the victim. Ukraine is the victim,
right,
but not of the Russians. Ukraine is the victim of the Bidens, the Zelenskys, the oligarchs who have fled the country now, who have raped and looted it for the last 8 years since we overthrew the legitimate government in that country. We are the transgressors. We are the problem. But when you own the media and the sheep are obedient, it's not hard to trick them. And that's what's been going on.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm really, really surprised that Fox News used to be trustworthy. Now they're just, they can't say enough bad things, evil Trump and horrible aggression and bombing maternity hospitals. Let's face it, you remember back during the Kuwait war, the Iraqi soldiers were breaking into hospitals, ripping infants out of incubators and throwing them on the floor to die so they could steal the incubators. I looked at my wife, I said, who the hell will believe this? What do soldiers need with incubators? And then, of course, we accidentally bombed the baby milk factory, and we know it was a baby milk factory because the sign said so in English. In English,
it's,
for God's sake, in Kuwait.
There's no truth in wartime, very little.
And the people buy it.
Yeah, of course they do. They stare at their screen, and they accept everything they see, for the most part.
Did you see that rally that Putin had with 200,000 people?
No.
Oh, it was on quite a bit. I was in my office. My wife was in her office, and all of a sudden I heard her.
Today?
Today.
Yesterday? Yeah.
Yesterday.
70%.
Today.
Conservatively, 70% of the Russian people support him 100%.
Well, I think it's more than that.
Of course it is. He's the greatest statesman of our time, period, on the world stage, period.
I remember.
I know you did. I got to do something else here. This is tangential to the topic, but it's important. As you know, many people have been suckered into going over to Ukraine to fight for the brave Ukrainian military and the Ukrainian people against the evil Russians.
A lot of
dumb Americans went over there to do that. Okay? Now, I want you to hear this verbal testimony from one of the Americans who went over there to fight for the Ukrainians and what he found and what actually happened to him and all the others. I want you to understand this. This is important. Let me find this. I hope you can hear it all right. I've got it turned up as loudly as I can. All right. This is an American. I think he's from Georgia. In the South. But anyway, this is one of the volunteers who went over to fight, and this is what he found.
So for any of those who are wondering what is going on, all right, we were part of the Georgia National Legion, 102nd Ukrainian Territorial Defense. Okay.
Can you hear it?
Yep. Our base got fucked up. The base right next to us got fucked up. Americans, British, a ton of British dead. All right. They're not saying nothing. They're counting our dead as their dead. They're trying to send us to Kiev with no fucking weapons, no kit, no fucking plates. The people who are lucky enough to get weapons are only getting magazines with like 10 fucking rounds, okay? When they wanted to send us to Kiev, we said no. Our whole group, a bunch of Americans, Canadians, British. So they told us we had to get the fuck out of there, they were going to shoot us in the back, alright? So me, this British guy, and another American, we fucking hid in the back of an ambulance to get out. We got to the border, and it is a whole other mess. When you get to the border, anyone who has kit, anyone who has any military shit, they're fucking pulling you out of the line, and they're sending you back to the front. This human, we got dropped off about 5 clicks from the fucking, from the border, and we walked. And we get to the border in this humanitarian group with a bunch of SSF veterans from England, pull us inside, say, you need to get, like, pulled us out and fucking, like, hit us. And they were like, you need to dump all your kit. They're pulling people out, cutting up passports, sending them back. So we dumped our shit. We got, like, in all of our fucking, we got in, like, Red Cross vests, and they had, like, fucking humanitarian passes to get us through the Ukrainian border. People need to stop coming here. It's a trap, and they're not letting you fucking leave. The best way to leave is like in a vic or a car or something. People who get out by vehicle have a better chance of hiding their fucking kit in the back, doing whatever the fuck they can, but do not try to leave their office if you're a volunteer. It's a mess. And it's a trap. And I have multiple people who can confirm this story for me. I'm getting...
Okay, that's the end of it. That's
wow.
All I was able to get. So, excuse the language, but...
He's kind of colorful, yeah. He's got a short vocabulary.
All right, well, that's okay. Here's the point. For you people listening around the world, do not go to Ukraine to fight for the noble Ukrainian government and the military, because you just heard the reality of it. They get shot in the back if they don't go to the front. And they get sent to the front with 10 rounds and it's in a 30-round clip? A mag? Come on. So these people are being sacrificed as cannon fodder. They're fools. They're idiots. And there were supposedly like 30,000 who have gone there so far to fight for these brave, noble Ukrainian commanders.
Jeez.
It's lies. It's all lies. He said it right. He said it's a trap. And they're always suckers. And they're there.
They kind of own you.
Oh, you bet. So he was very lucky to get out to tell the truth. So just a word to the wise. Don't go. Stay out of it. It's none of our business. Unfortunately, our politicians see it as our business because a lot of them are heavily invested there. The Bidens probably have a billion or two. All the oligarchs are mega billionaires. Zelensky is loaded with money, 1.6, what'd you say, 1.6 billion? Whatever it is.
Depends
anyway.
On which you look at.
All right.
1.2 to 1.6.
All right, let's say he's got a billion. I don't care. He was appointed. He was put in there. He's a placement. This is Zionist. He's another Zionist placement. This is what they do. So this country needs to be liberated and cleansed. Putin is 100% correct. We've been in there 8 years looting this country.
And a lot of it's
8 years.
Being looted right over to Hunter Biden.
Correct.
I'll probably get assassinated tomorrow.
I wouldn't think so.
I'm not important enough yet. No, I was starting to say,
no.
I was in here working, and my wife, it's about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and she yelled out, Lenny Riefenstahl has been reincarnated. So I went running in there to see what's going on. Because, you know, Leni Riefenstahl was a member of Shark Hunters. She and I had a lot of conversations. An incredible lady. She's the one who did all the Party Congress films and the Olympic films. I went running in there, and sure enough, there's Putin with 200,000 people in this stadium, just like Leni Riefenstahl would do for the party rallies. And now Fox News came out at 5 o'clock on that show, The Five, and said these people were all told they were going to a rock concert. Oh, my God.
See, okay, America, Harry, America is not a ghost of what it once was. America
I'm
is
afraid
dead.
You're right.
It's gone. We have no government. We have no democracy. I'm not sure how much of the Constitution would even apply anymore because these bastards would not allow it. The courts are corrupt.
That's
it's bad.
The case. The guys who are in charge are the crooks, and they control the government. Hey, I took an oath when I went into the military to defend and protect our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You try to do something against domestic criminals, and you wind up getting thrown in the slammer. But who knows?
Or worse.
Shakespeare said, even the smallest worm, when you step on him, will turn to attack. So let's see what happens.
Right. All right.
Where's the quick thing to log in? Because I'm seeing Thursday's guests up there.
I guess. No, you've been submitted. You'll be up there. Anyway, we're all right. Don't worry. Nobody looks at that anyway. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to, I think it's time, we're going to go in with Harry in 2008,
yep,
to Patagonia, and we're going to visit. Damn, you don't have all the pictures I wanted. Let's
see.
You
didn't tell me what you wanted.
The living room. We wanted to see the living room.
I got as much as I got.
All right. Okay, we're going to go look at the secluded, guarded by SS 24 hours a day, 2,700-acre, hidden, self-sustained community at the base of the Andes Mountains in Patagonia, on the side, actually up a finger, off an enormous lake. The lake is Lake Nahuelwapi. The estate is called Inalco. It still is. It had a ramp for seaplanes. The only way you could get there was by seaplane or by boat. There were only about 1,500 people living in the entire area back in the day, and that's back in 1945, 46. This is where Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun were flown from Europe to live out the rest of their normal lives on the basis of the agreement made between the Third Reich government and the American government. I think the British may have had a hand in it, but it was ultimately the Americans that made it, because the deal was, we want the technology. Give us your jet technology. Give us your rocket technology. Give us your scientists. Give us your engineers.
Submarines.
And you all of you who survived, can go to Argentina, to Bolivia, to Brazil. You can go to South America. You can live out your life. We will protect you. We will keep that secret. That was the exchange. Technology for freedom. And the deal was made, and all the big shots, Bormann and all the rest of them who were still alive, were down there. They got there various ways. Some went by ship. Some were actually flown by United States Army Air Corps DC-4 long-distance four-engine transports. They were flown down there. I knew somebody who knew a pilot who did it, so I know that that was a fact. There were hundreds of flights made carrying people, possessions, and goods of various sorts down to South America. So let's pull up the pictures, and we're going to go with Harry back in 2008 He was one of the first people to visit Inalco, although it had been used over the years for various functions by locals and so forth. It was still virtually exactly as it was back in 1945 when Hitler and Eva Braun took up residence there and lived there for about 10 years to 1955. This is like a walk back in history. So, all right, we have our pictures up. I hope all of you do. Just go to guests. Look, it should be up there now. I've just got it, so it's there. Check your guests.
I still see Father or Brother Paul Kramer. I'm old and feeble.
No, it's just your IP isn't
up. Let me refresh.
Yeah, there's always that. But I've got the pictures ready.
You're ahead of me because I can't get them. Tonight's guest, click here. Okay, we still got Paul Kramer, Mark, and Brett.
All right. Well, let me. We'll give it a few more minutes here before we start.
Okay.
Now you're there on the on mine.
Okay, I'll hit refresh again. Let's see, Monday through Friday. Click here for tonight's guest. Doggone it, there's Paul and Mark and Brett again. Maybe I got
right.
A defunctive computer.
No, it's a webmaster hasn't put it up yet.
Oh, okay. Blame the webmaster. Sorry, right. Norberto, I didn't do it.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about this Ukraine situation and the very real possibility, Harry, and you have a nuclear weapons background, and this is not a joke. Bosnia-Herzegovina has now been told by Russia, don't even think about joining the NATO alliance,
because
if you do, the same thing will happen to you that's happening to Ukraine. In other words, we're going in and you're not going to do it. So this is really at the edge.
You can see his point because NATO is building, you know, contacts right up to his border because he's talking about Ukraine being admitted to NATO. Whether that was a possibility or not, that's a fear he has. And, you know, it's a lot like having missiles in Cuba. We weren't happy about that. Here's Admiral Harry Cooper. Allegedly, the missiles in Cuba were to force the U.S. and JFK into pulling our missiles out of Turkey that were allegedly pointed at the Soviet
Union. They were called Jupiter missiles, I believe, weren't they? Not Jupiter. Can't remember. Anyway, they were IRBMs. They were intermediate-range ballistic missiles.
Right.
And they were on the border of Russia, and they were armed with nuclear warheads. And Russians said, get them out. Get them out.
And Turkey was a huge asset for us. I had friends who were, when I was in the Air Force, they were in Turkey at one of the air bases, and then they'd load up a four-wheel drive all-terrain kind of truck with all sorts of radio gear, and then they'd tell us he's going fishing, and he'd go up and park along the border and just be sitting there listening to whatever radio signals were going on out of Russia. We're still picking it up now. You know, well, you get our magazine and our hotmails. We've got one guy over in Europe. We refer to him as Marconi. He's got a bunch of buddies who are ditty catchers, as they used to call them. But they're tuning in and picking up stuff from the Russians. We can't we can't decode it, but we let everybody, all our members, know what frequencies they're using and some of the five-letter codes they're sending out. You know, and if some sharp crypto guy in membership can decode them, fine. Otherwise, you know, we just know that. And we see when there's increase in the amount of stuff that's being sent. So
what are you seeing? What's the report?
Well, all we know is when when they were getting ready to shove off into Ukraine, the frequency of the communications was going up quite markedly.
Sure.
But, you know, we didn't know what they were saying, but, you know, the dumbest guy in the world could see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of T-90 tanks all sitting there just inside the Russian border from Ukraine, all neatly stacked on their parade ground, sort of, and hundreds of APCs and cannons. Everything is all sitting right there, just like, you know, blitzkrieg, right, ready to start. So,
well, it didn't come
as a surprise.
All right, we're ready to go here, so we should probably get going with our pictures. It's okay. No, that's very interesting. I at this point in time, with your nuclear weapons background, what do you think are the chances of the West successfully forcing Putin into some kind of a nuclear posture?
We hope not. It can happen. Anybody can, you know, the U.S., China, India, Pakistan, Russia, they're all nuclear armed. Anybody can do something to trigger nuclear war. I don't think they will. Remember what Ronald Reagan called it, MAD, M-A-D, Mutually Assured Destruction.
Correct.
You know, I don't know how many nukes we have in our arsenal. Now, last time I heard, it was something like 3,000 or 4,000, and I'm sure Russia has a similar quantity, and it doesn't take but maybe a half a dozen of them, and you wipe out an entire continent.
Correct. Right.
And then where do you live after that?
At Hernando, down there in Florida somewhere.
Yeah, we got to be on the lower edge of page 4,916 of the target book from Russia.
Yeah,
we have nothing here that anybody wants to blow up.
Wherever you are down there, you're fine. Nah.
Yeah, but then you got to breathe the air.
That's true. That's where they're going to use underwater nukes, so they don't pollute the air with so much radiation.
Well, we hope nukes stay in their holders and not coming out. When I was in the Air Force, and these were little bombs, you know, 10 kilotons. Uh-huh. The ones I was loading were almost 20 megatons, 20 million tons of TNT.
Uh-huh.
And the one that we dropped on Hiroshima was 10 kilotons. That's like 10,000 tons. But
right,
the ones I was loading were 20 million tons of TNT yield. So,
supposedly the Russians and probably the Chinese have in international waters up to 20 megaton pre-positioned bombs on the ocean floor, which will create a tsunami of about 2,000 feet tall. So you figure it out. Do the math.
I better get some air in my scuba tank.
Yeah.
And look, also, we got our submarines, our boomer boats all around. They can drop missiles on anybody anywhere, too. So nobody will win that one.
No. Lose-lose. All right. Go to guests, and you'll see Harry Cooper. There's a link right under Harry's name. Actually, just click on Harry's name, and you'll go right to the page where the site is, sharkhunters.com. And if you go to the link where it says photos under his name, you'll pull up tonight's visual fair for the fun we're going to have. Okay, let's go. Number one, row one. And what are we looking at here?
Doing a little background here. This is in Buenos Aires. This is a restaurant that's about four blocks from the hotel we always use there. The ABC. This was a favorite, and still is a favorite gathering place for Germans. There's the German emblems all over the wall. There's German paintings and photographs all over the wall. So today it's just regular Germans. Back in the day, after World War II ended, it was a gathering place for Bormann, Mengele, Eichmann, and some of those other guys. And they had photographs of them in there. The food is passable, but the ambiance is great. And like I said, I'm just putting it up to give you a little background. Argentina is a beautiful country. Their economy is pretty much in free fall right now. They had, last time I checked with our friend Martin, they were at about a 30-something percent inflation, which I don't know how the hell you can sustain that, but that's what they got down there. It's a beautiful country, nice people, great food.
Unfortunately, the globalists have taken complete control of it, and that's sad.
Not working very well for them, I know. No. I've got a lot of friends down there besides Martin, but quite a few, Hector, Eduardo, if they're listening. So
okay. I just kind of
move on to number two.
Yeah. Martin, if you're listening, the package has arrived. Thank you.
That sounds like code.
Code.
Anyhow.
I'll tell you. Tell you.
I know what it is. Okay, number two. This is a shopping center about 100 yards away from our hotel. It is so beautiful. It's two stories up and one story down. And it looks like the inside of a cathedral.
That's three stories. I see a third story on top there, on the left.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. Three stories up, sorry. And you got some of the upscale stores there, and also right out on the street in front there, Cache Florida. It's a walking mall, and you got Dooney and Burke, and you got, the names escape me because I don't let my wife shop in those places. Because, it's a Michael Kors bag. Who the hell cares? You need a purse, that's all. She's always changing purses. Me, I got a wallet that I bought in Argentina in 2008, and it still works.
Good.
But this is a beautiful shopping center within, like I say, 100 yards of our hotel.
Now, everything's up to date in Argentina.
Right. Yeah. Play on up to date in Kansas City.
Number three,
these are just some friends I met. And no, they are not hookers.
They're all virgins. I can tell. It's all right.
Well, I don't know about that, but they're tango dancers.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. And this is on that street I'm talking about, Cache Florida. And they got the tango dancers. They got all sorts of art and crafts.
Are they dancing? Wait. Where do they dance? Are they just in costume for the photo op here?
Or no, they're dancing there where we're standing once I get out of the picture.
You're in the middle of the dance floor. Okay.
Yep. If you look off to the left in the picture, you see the guy in the white suit with the microphone?
He's the MC.
Yeah, he's also one of the tango dancers. These girls are all married. They dance there with their husbands. Mm-hmm. But if you want, they'll shoot a photo with you. And then you can take it back home and lie to your friends about their girls you're picking up.
All right. Just so you set them back down gently.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't chase girls when I'm out on the road. Now we're going to Bariloche, San Carlos de Bariloche, number four. You're looking at the Club Andino Bariloche. That means the Andes Club in Bariloche.
Bariloche is 500 kilometers south, approximately, of Buenos Aires. And back in the day, in 1945-ish, 1940-ish, there were very few people living there. This is on the edge of that enormous lake, Lake Nahuapi. And go ahead.
Yeah. The only way there was by seaplane, float plane. And once you landed there, you got around on boats. Now, when Hitler and Eva Braun flew down from Europe, they didn't fly all the way down here. That plane had a 7,000-mile range, and it landed in Uruguay near a town called Paysandú. And you remember Pizarro found a chart in an obscure file that showed where this plane landed. And so then some years ago, Martin and I went there And it was exactly like this old chart laid out. We interviewed a lot of old ladies that heard the plane land, et cetera. So
it landed on a road, a long country road.
Yeah. It landed beside the road on a huge, big grassy field.
Uh-huh.
These JU-390 was about the size of a 757, but it had a lot more wing area, so it could land at a lot slower speed, about 60 knots, and it had huge, big wheel assemblies. I think it had six wheels, two by two by two on each wing, and then the nose wheel
60
tail.
60 knots?
I can't remember which it. Yeah, it landed about 60
awfully,
knots.
That's awfully slow. That's for a giant plane like that.
It had a huge wing area.
Yeah.
So, but they got there, and then we showed a picture of another huge six-engine flying boat that we think maybe took them a little further. But then they took the train to, what the hell's the name of that, San Marcos, Estancia San Marcos, or whatever, I can't remember it. Estancia San Ramon, that's it, Estancia San Ramon. They got there about June, which was dead of winter, and they stayed there until they could get the rest of the way to Bariloche, which was about another 20 or 30 kilometers. And they moved into Inalco, where they stayed until 1955, when Perón, who was their protector, he was getting money hand over fist to keep everybody safe. But in 1955, they had that bloody coup that knocked Perón out of power, and he fled to Spain, and the Germans down there didn't have their protection anymore, so they had to scatter. So that was now this club. And Dino Bariloche, the reason I have that up there, that was founded by a guy named Otto Mehling in the 30s. He was a German agent, and he was a tough son of a gun. He was a mountain climber, and he staked out a claim on a mountain there, and he built his own home. He carried the boards up on his back. There were no roads. He had to climb the damn mountain up to the little flat area where he built his house, and he helped organize a ring of lookout facilities all around Lake Nahuapi. So that's why I put the Club Andino Bariloche there.
Got it. And in Bariloche then, this is probably, 30 miles away from Inalco itself at this point, the club? It's way across the water.
That's correct. You have to go around the I think it's the southern end of the lake. You got to go around. And unfortunately now they've put through that
two-lane highway.
That long highway. It's a lot like Route 66 was to the U.S. It goes like 3,000 miles or something like that all the way to Chile, which is nice, except it ran right smack past Inalco. It used to be you had to go by boat. Even when I went there in 2008, you had to go by boat. Now you can drive right along there, and the road is absolutely right up against the gate leading to the old farm. If you want to go to the house, you got to hike about, maybe 1 kilometer through the woods, up and down hills and mud and muck and mire. But, too many damn vandals are getting in there.
Okay. Next picture, number five?
Number five. This was another very prominent guy down there, his house. He had a butcher shop downstairs and living quarters upstairs. He was a low-level, he was a captain in the SS. Erich Priebke. And he's the guy that 1995, Sam Donaldson, the guy with the fiberglass haircut, came down and outed, and then he got wound up getting thrown back to Italy, where he spent the rest of his life under house arrest in a very upscale apartment with beautiful carabinieri guards that took him out to the park every day and took him to the store. So that was not really rough life for confinement in your house. But this was his place. He founded the German cultural center down there. He founded the German school, which is now a huge, big school, but don't ever mention that Priebke had anything to do with it. I did, and they run you to the door real fast.
Yeah. All right.
So once you leave there, you go around the lake a little to past a little town called Visa Langostura.
Okay,
and
next,
you come to Anoka, right?
Now,
number six.
I just want to make it clear that San Carlos de Bariloche in 1935, 1940, was there were only a couple thousand people there at the most, right? It was a very small place.
Only a handful of buildings.
Right.
Just a handful of buildings. We've got some early photos of that, and it was really, really small.
Okay.
Now it's 100-something thousand people. It's a great vacation spot for Argentina. Fishing in the summertime, skiing in the wintertime. It's beautiful. It's fantastically beautiful. You know, you got this huge lake right at the foot of the Andes. You'd swear you were in Bavaria.
Well, that's why it was chosen.
I think that's a real
close to home.
Solid part of the reason.
What Dönitz said about it when he announced it, he said, "We have found and secured a place for the Führer that is inaccessible, completely secure, and we're very proud of that."
Impregnable was the word he used.
And this is what it is. This is what it was. It was not the South Pole. They didn't live in a big tunnel in the Antarctic. This was the place that was chosen. It was a completely contained 2,700-acre ranch. There were many buildings on it, like a dozen or more, some residences, some communications and control buildings. There were lots of people there doing lots of important work. Tremendous amount of money was flowing in there from Borman and others. So they had it all there. This was the control center of what was left of the Third Reich. It was right there. So picture number six is Harry Cooper on the left walking up toward the primary home where Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun lived from 1945 to about 1955. And if you think about it, they lived in that home, Harry, probably longer than any other home they lived in, without any doubt. But it might be that Hitler lived there longer than almost any other home that he lived in, except his childhood residence. That house was occupied by them for 10 years. See the Bavarian architecture? It's all Bavarian. The house was built by...
It sure is.
The land,
I got
land
off the plane the first time in 2008. I thought I'd landed in Munich.
Yeah. Well, the land was purchased by the Mercedes family. And the home and all the houses on the further back behind the trees were all the gardeners and the people who grew the crops and the people in charge of the energy and all of that. And all the SS people that were involved in the day-to-day operations of what was left of the Reich were there. And this is the home, and the view out the window, as you'll see in a few minutes, is absolutely spectacular. So that's the home.
The big window upstairs, that was the master bedroom for Hitler and Eva Braun. And if you were able to swing about 500 meters to the left, you would see the remains of the farm. They had a farm there where they raised horses. They raised Great Dane dogs, which were great guard dogs. They raised pigs. They raised chickens. They raised everything that was consumed there, just like on the mountain in Bavaria, where they had the Berghof, et cetera.
Where the Berghof was, of course. It was all self-sustained.
Exactly. So number six was the way it looked when I got there in 2008. Number seven, sadly, is the way it looks now. Looks like something out of a Stephen King horror movie.
It's quite restorable.
It is.
And if I had the money, I would go down there and restore it. Except that
hey, maybe
Zelensky
will loan us some money.
Not until he gets his Nobel Prize.
I think, well, let's see, it's 23 million euros to buy everything, which is about 30 million U.S. dollars, and probably another 10 million to renovate everything. So $40 million will do it. But I looked at my bank statement. I've got $10 and change in my savings account. And about $1,000 in the checking account. So,
all right, well, let's be serious now. If this were done, you and I both know that the tourism that would come to see this property and the outbuildings in the back, and it could be restored, you'll see. They would pull in tens of millions
a year. We also have enough. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. It would be a tremendous tourist reaction.
Yeah.
Attraction, because look at the Eagle's Nest restaurant. What do they make on that every year? And that's still
God,
up
they make
at the Berghoff
so
location. Yeah,
right. The Eagle's Nest, everything there on the mountain was torn down because it was Nazi. It was horrible Nazi, except not the Eagle's Nest, because they're making so damn much money, they can pack 40 people into that elevator, and it goes up and back down every minute, every 1 minute, I think it is. And you got to pay, wow. I think it's about $25 U.S. It's about 19 or 20 euros. And you multiply 40 people times $25 every couple of minutes going up, plus what they sell up there in the restaurant, plus what they sell at the gift shop. Figure $100 per person is what's going to get spent. And they probably bring 10,000 people, I'm just rough guessing, a day. They're making a fortune up there during the season. You know, once the snow flies and it gets really nasty, they shut it down. But, you know, so.
The home you're looking at could be gorgeous again. Structurally, it's fine. The exterior is tacky. It's just, it's worn. It needs stained. It needs refinished, refurbished.
Exactly.
It's not falling
down.
We've got
enough members in Shark Hunters. If we were able to buy the place, and I say we need some electricians, we need some carpenters, man, I'd have a storm here. Yeah. And we'd fly them down there and put them up for a couple of weeks so they work, give them room and board.
Just remember that the grounds were beautiful. They were all manicured lawns, and this was quite a place.
As you see in the 2008 picture.
Okay. Now, picture number eight.
Eight. Yep.
Harry took that picture. Did you take that one through the window?
Yep. Yep, because in 2008, I did not. Well, let me just say, I'm not supposed to say that I got inside the building, but this one was shot through the main window.
I don't believe you. But we'll leave that alone.
I learned how to pick locks when I was with the mafia.
There's no glass.
But this is through the window, we'll say.
We'll say.
Anyhow, this was in the main room, the great room.
Now look
beautiful
at that table. Look at that gorgeous table. Look at the chairs. You see that?
I wonder whatever happened to all those things.
Well, I think they would have been looted long ago if somebody hadn't moved to try to preserve them.
That's a good probability, yeah, true. So you look at number eight, and then click over to number nine. That's the way it looks today. Some tacky Kmart chairs, and that's it. I'm standing right where that big table was, and looking at the area where the sofa was. And now you got cheap plastic Kmart chairs, and nothing else. We had the fire going because there's an old guy that lives there. He's kind of like a caretaker. He's not Torres. He's this old guy that has two humongous steers that he uses to take fallen trees down with and everything. I mean, these things got to be like 2,000 pounds apiece. But they're very docile, and they just drag stuff. He cleared a path for us when we were there in 2019 so that we could get up to some really unique man-made little, things, little religious structures with little religious pictures in, or place to put a statue, whatever okay. they are.
Look at the flooring. Look at the flooring. Those are enormously thick planks of wood. This
oh,
is
boy.
Beautiful. And that's
it
the great room.
It just needs to be, yeah.
It could all be brought back. Oh, my, could it be brought back. Off
all
to the left is
money.
The view. Off to the left is out the window to the view of the lake. And there you go. Well, let's look
yeah.
at number 10.
10.
This is
that's
the
view
this is
out
a,
of the main
this is
window.
The view. That's the view.
And you see the trees there, the little round ball of trees and then the tall trees. That's actually on two little islands. They refer to them as the twins. And they pretty well block the view of the house from anybody snooping around off there to the right. This is up a finger of the lake. This is the way it looked when I first got there in 2008. And you go to... you know, that's also the upstairs window, the master bedroom, which was Hitler and Eva Braun's. This is the view you saw. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's quite spectacular. And there were,
yep.
again, 24-hour security. And I mean
oh, yeah.
wartime-grade security. Nobody got near that house or that property on that lake.
Right, and remember... This guy, Otto Mehling, he set up observation posts all around the lake. And after the war was over, there was armed German security in and around the lake, around the town especially, and on the lake in boats, motorized boats. They had armed security. So nobody was going to get to him.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll come back and... more pictures. Oh, the next picture is very special. All right, we'll be right back with Admiral Cooper and much more. Stay with us.